windy today.
No, it's Thursday.
So am I. Let's go have a drink. Welcome to Brookings Cafe. There's just no telling who might be here today as we venture in to quench our thirst. We call it our Great American Debate. We come to the discussion in the spirit of fairness and an attempt to offer something conclusive. We don't claim to be experts, but we will strive to come to the table prepared to discuss our topic. We are going to extend invitations to those we think may offer an opposing point of view, and in some cases we may extend a challenge to specific people or groups to defend their point of view. Beware, we fact-check anything that sounds questionable, and we look dimly on mere opinions that aren't based in knowledge. We are trying to reach some sort of a resolution, something that both sides can settle on as an idea worth promoting. Net neutrality. You've heard the term, but what does it mean to you? Does it mean you will have to pay more to get what you want on the internet? Does it mean you may not even be able to get what you want on the internet? Is it a question of free speech? What is Title II, and is the battle really about money, and who is going to gain from doing away with net neutrality? I'm Dan.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Ray.
I'm Linda.
And I'm Dane.
So the first question is, what does net neutrality mean to you? How are you going to be affected by the direction the current policy is going? Dane?
Oh, I thought you wanted a man on the street to give you their perspective.
We're not going to drag somebody in off the street. You have to answer.
No, I've got the professional answer for what net neutrality is. If you want to start with man on the street, you should start with...
Pick a clever man on the street, not just some dummy.
Net neutering? What's net neutering?
Well, I'll start. I think net neutrality means pretty much internet as we have known it for the past several years, since we've been using it so actively, when we can... I know a lot of people who don't have a lot of money, but they are able to afford a computer and to get internet access, and they can find out a lot of stuff from the internet. But without net neutrality, I think we're going to see a lot more control over what we're able to access on the internet, especially if we're not able to afford to pay for faster service. I think that's sort of what it means to me.
So you're saying that it's a question of money? Is it that the industry essentially wants the opportunity to make money doing this? Is that what it's all about?
I think that's some of it. I do think, and so that we wouldn't be as free to just find the information we wanted or need online, mm-hmm, as we are right now, although sometimes due to the recent FCC ruling, I don't know when that goes into effect, but I feel like, gee, my internet's slower than usual or something. So I don't know if that's already kicked in, but I think the internet is a wonderful way to give everyone a chance to get information and communicate with each other. And I think if we repeal net neutrality, it means we won't have that. It won't be as free, and it'll be more controlled, and there'll be the people with big money controlling what we have access to. That's my understanding of it.
Is it conceivable that to send an email might cost you a nickel?
I don't know, but that would be... that wouldn't be good.
I think what it is that it would cost you a nickel if you wanted it to get there the same day. Is that right?
Huh?
You would get much slower service if you weren't paying for it. Is that right?
Well, I don't know how slow service is slow service. A lot of times I think what I've got right now is pretty slow. And I don't know about it taking until tomorrow. That seems to kind of defeat the purpose of having email that you can, or, you know, like text. I mean, you can send a text now and get a reply now instead of having to wait a week for the letter to be delivered. But so if it's a money game, if people are just looking for ways to make money, is this one of the things where maybe it's not that I pay a nickel for an email. Maybe it's that for the privilege of having an email service, I pay $9.99 a month. I know I'm paying $9.99 a month now because I like to watch YouTube, and so they made me this great deal. Hey, if you'd like to watch it without these ads interrupting you in the middle of what you're watching, then for $9.99 a month, they take the ads off. And
I think maybe even more than just what we might have to pay for is what companies or organizations who are putting their information on the internet for lots of people to see, they may have to pay in order to get faster service or faster, I don't know all the terms, but in order for their site to download fast enough for you to use, mm-hmm. they may have to pay more. And that may mean they can't afford to be on the internet or afford to do as much on the internet as other companies can. So the richer company could have the great big fancy website, and a company that maybe as a mom and pop operation could not possibly afford that. And so mm-hmm. you wouldn't, right now it seems like it's pretty fair that if you want to learn how to make a website, and yes, there's probably expense in learning in getting a good website training, but once you've gotten that, then you can make your website, and you can make it, I think, as fancy as you're able to, well, that you have software for. Mm-hmm. But it's possible that without net neutrality, that big corporations like AT&T or Comcast could control what you're able to put out there. Is that, I think we need some experts here to really tell us.
I would say it's more about the speed and the quality of the access that you have to the different locations on the internet, and your access to different services and apps, rather than necessarily the website you put together. With enough time, you could put together an awesome website for free. If you've got time and a little podunk computer and a halfway decent internet connection, you can make your own website and it can look okay.
Some of what I've been reading has been pointing out that the big companies conceivably could shut out the little companies by just simply slowing them down to the point that you get frustrated with it, and so therefore you don't want to watch it. So like Facebook, for example, is big now, and they've got mm-hmm. the big bucks, and mm-hmm. they can pay for this and that. But what about a competitor that comes in and wants to do a startup? That's part of what I've been reading, is that it would kill the creativity within the network, within the system of websites and so on, that these little companies just simply wouldn't be able to compete, so they probably wouldn't.
And if you don't have a website today, you might as well not even be in business. It's just, you seem so podunk.
Mm-hmm. People want to know what your hours are and what's on your menu.
I used to have a small business, and we kept a website just because when people asked us if we had a website, we could say, yes, we have a website. I think in the 7 or 8 years we had it, we made 2 or 3 sales over the web.
Well, some companies really do a lot of business.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah. But, I mean, mm-hmm. we had this website just so we could say, oh, yes, we have a website.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, perhaps we ought to try and define some of our terms that we're using. And if I may, I'll try to give you some of the same information that I gave my students on net neutrality. The term net neutrality itself is not actually an act or a law. It's a concept. It's a principle.
Mm-hmm.
It's the principle that traffic, that things you do on the internet are all treated equally and fairly. No traffic will be discriminated against or treated with or treated negatively by the person that is moving the traffic. In this context, the person moving your traffic is called an ISP, an internet service provider. That's the company, usually private, that is moving your requests for a website around, actually moving that data, and then giving you the results, which might be a Facebook page or an image or whatever the case may be. So this principle of net neutrality is not something you can repeal, but you can repeal laws or change laws that follow the principle of net neutrality. So when people say, you know, net neutrality has been repealed, it's not perfectly accurate. It's more that laws which were enacted in 2015, I believe it was called the Open Internet Order, those were what you might call net neutrality laws or net neutrality regulations, which were removed. So to understand something like internet traffic, well, internet traffic refers to, just like traffic on a highway, it's traffic on the internet, things that are done on the internet. The actual repeal that took place, the FCC vote in 14 December of 2017, was a vote to reclassify the internet from being considered to be similar to a utility back to being an information service. So when it was a utility, it was in that sort of free state of being where all traffic was more or less treated equally. So real quick, does everybody kind of get what it means for the internet to be like a utility? It means it's kind of treated fairly and equally. There's no measurement necessarily.
It's kind of like AT&T. I make a phone call to somebody and they don't edit my conversation.
Sure.
NSA may monitor my conversation, but as of yet, nobody's censoring what I say on the telephone, and they're not, I mean, it used to be that you paid, especially for long distance rates, you paid a certain amount depending on how long you talked. Local talk calls, you could talk forever if you wanted to, and I know, you know, plenty of people who did. And I know that I probably spend more time on the internet than I should, but you know, I'm not being charged for the amount of time that I'm using. And wasn't there a time when you were being charged for how many minutes you were on the internet? Am I remembering that correctly?
I don't think so.
It may depend on an ISP at the time, possibly. I couldn't say.
You
might
be confused how much you did things on your phone.
The net was not always neutral necessarily. It was not always, net neutrality was not always the rule of law for the internet. And in fact, you might say it all kind of started with the telegraph system, but we won't go quite that far back.
Yeah.
But one of these things to remember is that now with the repeal of net neutrality, now ISPs may have the ability to do certain things with the internet service that they provide. Because with the repeal of net neutrality, the principles of all traffic must be treated equally are not quite there, depending on the law. So ISPs could possibly do some of the things that people are concerned about. Things such as, you might hear terms like fast lanes and slow lanes. Has anybody heard of those?
Yeah. Right.
What have you guys heard about fast lanes and slow lanes?
And here's a graphic on my computer that says, two-tier internet ahead, expect delays.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Picture of a highway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's.
Now I have a question about YouTube. Is YouTube a service provider, and YouTube programs be given equal access and be able to transmit at the same speed, or if you're selling Chevys, will you have more than somebody that's selling widgets?
So YouTube is not an internet service provider, but they're a website. Provide a service so you can...
Okay, so everybody on YouTube then would have the same access.
Possibly. In order for YouTube to set up some kind of a deal where certain people are able to access certain videos at different speeds, they'd have to be able to identify where traffic is going exactly into which video, and then slow down the people watching little podunk homemade YouTube videos, and then speed up the people watching the Chrysler videos.
So the net neutrality as it stands now will not affect YouTube users or YouTube? it's, entrepreneurs.
It's possible for internet service providers to see just about darn near everything that you do with your internet connection. Unless you're properly protecting yourself with things like virtual private networks, or you're using Tor, or using any other of the great, fantastic means of protecting yourself from surveillance by companies or the government, it's possible for ISPs to see a lot of the stuff you do. They can see what apps your phone is using. When you're using mobile data on your phone, who is your internet service provider? Well, it's your mobile data provider. And you're using them as a service. They can see, I mean, their hands are on nearly everything that you do on your mobile data. They can see, for the most part, websites that you're visiting, websites you're sending traffic to and receiving information from. They may not be able to see every letter. Things like encryption help prevent that. But they can see a pretty remarkable amount, a terrifying amount, you might say, of what you're doing online.
Well, there was something that came through, it seemed like a couple of years ago, maybe. I remember Stephen Colbert made a comment about it, that what the internet various entities really want to do is to be able to track what your preferences in life are. So if you have a preference for, let's say, off-road vehicles, then they know that information and they can put that into the data bank so that the ads that you get will be outdoorsy kinds of ads.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're a Prius driver, you would get a different set of ads, a different perspective on mm-hmm. on what car ownership, and it's more than that, because it's not just your, I mean, like they would say, for example, that so many people who own Priuses are also apt to be interested in, and then maybe, you know, particular programs on particular channels, and knowing all of this, your clothing preferences, your it's getting to the point where they want to, I mean, I'm pretty sure my shoe size is out there on the net somewhere, and that if I go in to fill out something to buy a shoe, that little box of what size do I wear is probably already going to be
for your convenience.
Filled in,
yeah.
For me, yeah, oh, for my convenience. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, some of it's neat and it's convenient and all of that, but do I really want them to know right down to my shoe size?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, the ability of ISPs to observe and collect that kind of information is unrelated to the repeal of net neutrality. They've been able to do that for a while. Any ISP worth their salt knows a lot of that.
Right.
Now, the repeal of net neutrality also in the from my understanding of the actual repeal, doesn't affect what they're able to collect one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is something called House Bill 4155. Linda, would you mind taking it away for a moment and I'll fill in?
Okay, House Bill 4155 is in Oregon, and what I looked up and on the internet and found that it gives Oregon new tools to restore some of what the FCC has taken away in repealing net neutrality. Because net neutrality was repealed by the FCC, by our current FCC, in December, I believe it was.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
I think it was December 14th.
December 14th, 2017, and a 3-2 vote.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely along party lines.
It was, yes. Yeah.
Republicans want to repeal it.
And so the repeal passed through the FCC. But in Oregon, we still have power as a state to control a lot of things. And our Attorney General, Ellen Rosenblum, I had an email from her, and she's encouraging passage of HB 4155, which House Bill 4155, it's in Oregon specifically, and it would mean we could still have an open and free internet here in Oregon. And so, and she says it would show the federal government that Oregon doesn't back down when faced with these problems, that mm-hmm. we will.
There are several other states proposing similar bills.
And some that have passed. I think at least one that has passed them, an M state, I believe.
Oh, really? Oh, because she did say that Ellen Rosenblum, that she has joined with other state attorneys general to challenge the FCC's decision in court. So there's several ways of doing it. There's making Oregon sort of immune to the repeal, and there's also going to court. And if they could really challenge that in court, that could probably be turned around.
Well, somebody explained to me today that claims to know what they're talking about, that the FCC isn't saying so much that they're against net neutrality, they're against the way net neutrality came about. It was an order from Obama as opposed to going through the FCC procedure, and now they want to repeal that, so of course it will easily just slide through Congress to be something more sensible.
Well, it's a fair challenge if you prefer limited government and if you prefer states' rights. So by Oregon considering House Bill 4155, well, that's a state deciding whether or not its people, well, the people of the state deciding whether or not they want to vote in favor of this through their representatives, you know, vote in a representative that would support 4155. And to assuage Dan's concerns about his shoe size being out there, well, 4155 specifically addresses the collection and sale of personal information. As a card-carrying member of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization that's all about trying to protect people's privacy and fighting for your right to be private and have privacy online and electronically, I'm definitely in support of 4155. I like the idea of people's information being protected. If an ISP wants to sell information that it's collected about you, it needs to inform you. Now, granted, that's probably going to be in the form of terms of service. And oh boy, reading those terms of service is a thrill. And I'll have my kids read through terms of service. I will look for the most frightening thing I can find in Instagram's terms of service or Facebook's terms of service and say, look at what they tell you that they will do. Charter's terms of service, take a look, folks. It's in there. Frontier's terms of service. If you've got a little Frontier modem over there with a phone cable connected to it, check out the terms of service that you signed when you signed up for Frontier Internet. There's interesting things in there.
South Park did a show a few years back where the terms of service that the people had signed up for was they were giving their father into slavery or something like that, or that, you know,
right.
No, because nobody reads them.
It's the Apple terms of service, and Apple's not the only one. They're not the only one. Windows, I mean, Microsoft does it. Oh yeah,
you can't exist anymore without signing somebody's terms of service.
That's right.
When you let somebody else connect to your hotspot on your phone, you are binding them to the terms of service,
which nobody reads.
No, but it's good to be aware.
Some do. Some oddballs do.
Yeah. Well,
if they're in Dane's class.
Yeah. All those poor kids.
And I guess I expect if I sign the agreement that if something's not right about it, one of my organizations that I belong to is going to send me an email and say, don't sign this particular thing. I mean, I put a lot of faith and trust in the organizations that I belong to. I want to go back for just a minute because we're talking about ISPs. So that's like I subscribe to Spectrum. So is that the ISP? Those are the ones who are watching everything I do?
Charter Spectrum, if they're your internet service provider, they're handling your traffic. And if you are giving them your traffic without any kind of real protection or encryption, then it's possible that they're able to monitor and store data on your activity for any length of time.
Okay, so what would they do with it?
Well, it's in their terms of service. They might do collect diagnostics on you to improve the customer experience. And whatever that may mean. They may, under current law, who knows what Charter specifically can do with information that they collect about you. Charter does offer some pretty remarkable ad programs to groups like cities and companies. But they say, hey, we can reach these customers and provide them with ads based on their interest in your product. We can find people interested in your product. How do they do that? Well, they know people are interested in certain products because they can observe things about you and where you go. Now, they'll say, oh, this is anonymous data. It's not tied to you. Mm-hmm. And whether you trust any company is entirely up to you. It's entirely a personal decision whether you trust that company to really, truly keep that data anonymous.
Well, I read enough in the news about what companies do that, no, I don't trust any company. I think everybody in the world, basically, is out for their own gain. And one of the things, I used to be in the advertising business, and over the course of years, I learned about the psychology of this and the psychology of that, and some of it was subject to a lot of question as to whether or not if it was real or not. But what I see now is far beyond anything that I ever learned to do, and it, to me, it seems like it's crossed the line. It's now I have a brother-in-law who's a computer geek kind of a guy, and he's retired. He's a couple of years older than I am, and I'll tell you, I'm in my 70s. But he really thinks that this is all really cool, really neat. I mean, he loves it because to him, it means that Big Brother is, in essence, taking care of him. So he loves being able to set daily alarms on his phone and announce to him and these new, I'm going to call it Alexa. That's the only one that I know because I own one. But so here she is listening all the time to everything that I say. And my brother-in-law just loves it. And I admit, it's. I said this once before, it's convenient to be able to use the Alexa, to be able to use all these various and sundry apps. So, okay, so it's convenient, but should we fear this? Is it beyond just convenience?
I feel like we're getting a little off the whole net neutrality, or is this it tied into net neutrality?
No. All right.
I don't know, but it is a really important topic. But it's But if we're going to really, but you say, Dane, you were saying that House Bill 4155 addresses the this question of our
quite specifically. In fact, Section 2. Yes. Section 2 reads, a broadband internet access service provider may not disclose, sell, or permit access to customer personal information except as permitted under this section. And then under that section, it defines the ways that an ISP could disclose, sell, or permit access to that information, and they have to tell you or you give consent, basically.
So that may actually be even more than was covered by the original net neutrality rules. Is that correct?
It may be.
It may be, huh? But I guess my question would be, if you would like to see House Bill 4155 pass, do we, those of us sitting here and in our audience, do we have any way to help it pass? We're not in Salem making the laws ourselves, but...
Okay, so this is a state government thing, so...
Yes.
But this is another question that I also have because I read that Congress can essentially override the FCC's decision within 60 days, but I think within 60 days was yesterday.
Are you sure it has to be within 60 days? Because I don't.
I think that's what I read somewhere.
I see them talking about it still. They're not. It doesn't sound like they're saying the deadline is passed.
Maybe it's 60 business days or something
like
that.
Oh, on that subject, there's a group working at the federal level, and they're saying that February 27th, they're going to call Operation Hashtag One More Vote. And that's going to be a day where they're getting everyone to contact their senators and get 51 votes in the Senate to turn back the repeal of net neutrality. There's something called the Congressional Review Act, a Congressional Review Act, and that requires a simple majority in the Senate. That would be 51 votes, and they could use that type of a system, Congressional Review Act, in order to overturn what an agency has done. And the FCC is an agency. And so they could overturn the repeal. It would take both the Senate and the House, a majority in both of those. And so according to this group, which I'm not sure, you can go to battleforthenet.com/onemorevote to find out more about that. But according to them, they now, as of today, have 50 votes in the Senate. And so they need one more vote. And that would do it for the Senate. Then it has to go to the House. So right. So that is certainly more than 60 days, but they're still talking as if they can do it. So I don't know about
the
60
days. I just referred to my note here, and it says the CRA is a relatively new tool that allows Congress to reverse regulatory actions within 60 legislative days.
Oh.
So that's the way they're counting it.
That may be.
But it is from 60 legislative days of their enactment. So I don't know.
Well, you know, a work week for a legislator doesn't necessarily look like a work week for we sitting here at this table.
Yeah, right, because so, they take recesses and
so on. It's real popular to rag on our representatives.
But it does mean that they don't have forever to do it. They need to. Yeah.
So, and there's some sympathy for that, but it might be a little harder in the House. And even if it gets through, Speaker Paul Ryan may not bring it up for a vote. And even if it goes through Congress, President Trump may not sign it. He's not really in favor of it.
So that leaves us, we should be working hard in Oregon. Because we could have net neutrality at least here in Oregon.
That's not the only thing that's going on. I understand there's been quite a few lawsuits. And as a matter of fact, Oregon is involved with a number of other states in a particular lawsuit against it.
So we want to do whatever we can to keep that going, too.
Working on all fronts.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like we really need to put our focus in on the Oregon legislature. Because, I mean, you know, if it's going to have to overcome the hurdle of President Trump signing it, among other things, and, you know, we still need one more vote, but, I mean, it's still a Republican-dominated Congress and Senate, so I'm not giving it a lot of chances there.
Oh, I think we're better off if we have limited time and energy, probably better off really working on the state at this point, and to do that, we should be contacting our state representative. I'm hoping everyone in our audience knows who that is. That is David Brock Smith, and you can contact him.
You have the information there?
I do. I called his office today, and it's 503-986-1401. That's 503-986-1401. And his staff member answered and talked to me about it. She recorded my preference. I told her I would like him to vote in favor of House Bill 4155, and she put that in her log and said he doesn't actually have an official position right now on that, but she believes in conversation with him that he is leaning toward neutrality. So, but we don't know for sure. And the more people who contact him and tell him that's what we would like, that will only but help. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so who else?
Who else?
Yeah, who else? Is that the only legislator that
that's our legislator.
Our legislator.
For our district, for those of us in Curry County.
Yeah, it's only on the House side right now.
But if you don't live in Curry County, you need to look up your legislator, your state legislator.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because every House district has a different legislator.
Is this the kind of thing that we could write to Senator Merkley and Wyden? Is it the Senate that needs one more vote or the House?
The Senate.
The Senate.
Right now.
So, and they've probably already signed on for this, do you know?
I did have a statement from both of them saying they're in favor of net neutrality, so they're in favor of repealing it. But I think it never hurts to contact representatives and let them know you're glad for what they're doing, as well as trying to put pressure on them to change their vote. They do need to hear from us. They're both very friendly to the idea of open and accessible internet. Mm-hmm. So it only helps to let them know we're behind them.
That we do appreciate what they're doing.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's good. So What else do we need to think of in terms of net neutrality? And I mean, it sounds like the direction we're taking at this particular moment is about how can we stop it? And we did discuss a little bit about what the implications might be if it continues in the direction that it's going. What else can we discuss in terms of this? Like, for example, we talked about manipulating data a little bit. What about competition? I'd like to expand on competition a little bit. What does it mean I may not notice the difference on what it is, but I mean, is this conceivably a disruptor of American business? Because a lot of it's on the internet now.
That's a good question. I wonder about that.
Well, we've mentioned that it could be it could make it more difficult for beginning internet businesses competing with well-established big countries if the internet is not neutral. They may be discriminated against in speed.
So what about it? So that would be for small companies.
That could be counterproductive to competitive edge for small startups.
How would that relate to, like, say, nonprofit organizations? Would it be the same thing? I mean, because a lot of nonprofit organizations, for instance, Curry Coast Community Radio, are very small. And so would it be difficult for an organization like ours? Would it be harder to get information out?
We have a website.
We do.
And people go to the website.
But we may not be able to pay Charter to give us the same same speed connectivity as Netflix is giving people in the Southern Oregon area. So Netflix, as a great big honking company, might be able to pay ISPs in Southern Oregon enough to make sure Netflix is always in a fast lane. But little old KCIW, your friendly neighborhood community radio station, may not necessarily have the same clout. Give us about 5 years, people. We'll get there.
That's a lot of donations, because we don't have the money right now. No.
There's also the thing that you might not be available to a lot of people. A neutral internet is like a large ocean. Every port is available to that sea. If we break it up, then it's going to be individual lakes.
I like that metaphor. There are downsides to consider of net neutrality. There are downsides to it. Now, some of those downsides are, of course, debatable. But to understand that, let's define a few more terms. The term FIFO, or first in, first out. Well, in a neutral internet where your ISP may not discriminate and may not make some traffic faster or some traffic slower, where all traffic is treated equally. For my listeners present, what are some examples of internet traffic that is not important? I'd like to go around, starting with Dan. Give me an example. What's something that's not important?
To who? To me?
Sure.
Anything I don't look at isn't important to me.
Go for a specific example. Give me something, silly, maybe.
Silly.
Asking Dan for something silly.
I get a lot of news from the internet.
Okay.
And, you know, I like to think that I'm shopping around for my information about what's going on in the world from more than one source anyway. I watch enough TV news from the major networks to get a handle of what's going on from there, but I do kick into Google News for a lot of my information. It is important to me. And things come into importance at various times. Like, for example, right now I'm looking at a sign company.
Okay.
Because I want to get a banner made for the radio station. And but once I've got a sign, then they won't be important to me anymore, except as a number in a Rolodex file. And but no, my news is important. I guess I would start with that. That's my news is important to me.
Okay. So Dan gave us an example of something that's important to him, is being able to look up the news. I'm going to ask for something not important, something silly or trivial that you do online, something that is not important. And just try to give me like a one-word, two-word little phrase.
You mean that we do? Or
Yeah, something you do. I'm just looking for real-world examples here, folks.
Oh. I was going to say basketball is trivial, but I don't follow basketball, so that...
Then it's not important.
No, let's say like a basketball video. I'll take that. Basketball video. Something unimportant. Tracy, you got one for me?
Well, there's just things that aren't too important. They're just little entertainment things. Maybe I'll book a video on YouTube or something.
Okay, so a video about basketball... what's a trivial video?
That I'm actually interested in?
Sure.
Okay, like something. I like animals.
All right, a little animal video. All right, Linda, give me something unimportant. Trivial, something silly.
Well, a knitting video.
A knitting
video.
Would
it be important to my daughter? She does a lot of knitting, but not to me.
Okay.
I'd never knit.
So those are some things that are not too terribly important. Now give me something that you could do online or with the internet that is extremely important. Maybe life-saving, maybe important for freedom or for health. Now give me some examples. Dan gave us being able to look at the news.
I think that's pretty important.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to know that what I'm looking at on the website is in fact a bona fide source of, say, the New York Times.
Sure. Okay.
Yes.
Tracy, give me one.
Weather.
Knowing what the weather is. That is very important, especially if you're going to go out on the ocean or go traveling. Ray, give me something important.
Well, you mentioned life-saving.
Yeah.
Symptoms of beating heart or, a heart that's out of rhythm or a high fever or something like that, very frequently the fastest way to check the possibilities of that is to look it up on the internet.
Okay, so diagnosing medical information online.
Right.
Not just, Joe sitting at home, but a doctor needing to research something perhaps. Okay, Linda, give me one, something important.
Actually, social media, because we have two daughters that live far away and... Instagram, that's the main one we're using right now for them, and that's really important because we find out a little bit about them.
Okay, so this all led me to the point I was hoping to illustrate, which is that the traffic to the basketball video is equally as important when in that first-in, first-out principle. It's treated with the same importance as Linda trying to reach out to her family. The video of the animals, the cute little puppies and kittens all playing in the same little box, is treated with the same importance as someone trying to find out what kind of snake just bit them. And Dan, looking up the news, which is important, is treated with the same level of, it's given the same speed as someone looking up memes online. So in that first in, first out principle, some people argue that's a problem, that internet service providers can't speed up certain traffic for what you might consider to be more important things. So, Tracy's got something for me.
Well, except that importance is usually determined by a financial number, which is not necessarily the same kind of importance.
Good point. Thank you, Tracy. Another thing to consider is that voice over IP traffic, that's things like FaceTime, Skype, Discord, and others, that's an example of a service that you could speed up or slow down with the repeal of net neutrality. Right now, first in, first out, your VoIP call, your Skype call to your son who's serving overseas in the Army is treated with the same importance as the kid playing Call of Duty. And all that traffic is all handled with the same speed. So some folks point out that there's an inherent problem there.
To me, I remember dial-up, and I remember how incredibly slow that was. And now it's pretty quick. I mean, granted, it's not instantaneous, but I very seldom have to wait more than 4 or 5 seconds to get what it is I want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if another 3-5 years in the future, let's say, if the speeds might be way higher, like I hear about 5G, and am I running on 4G or something like that? And 5G is even better yet. I mean, is that kind of speed maybe going to become irrelevant in the next few years?
Oh, probably not. We're probably going to find even more things to send over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It could be holograms or smells or who knows what. Those are kind of silly examples.
Bigger files yet.
Oh, big old honking files.
Because I remember, back when it was dial-up, we didn't send big files.
Floppy drives were enough, but
yeah.
Now.
Exactly.
kids don't know, you show them an image of a floppy drive, and they go, oh, that's the save icon.
Yeah.
So I actually got to show some kids some old floppy drives, and they pulled them open and looked inside.
And you need a whole stack of them sometimes in order to be able to convey a given amount of information. I was just reading here about high-speed broadband options, et cetera, and about the barriers to the marketplace that customers often can't switch if a big broadband provider starts messing around with their service. And I wonder, to what extent can a big broadband provider actually mess around with the service? What I've been hearing for the most part is the slowdown, that in order for Ray to be able to get his snakebite information, he has to wait for whatever. I mean, can they slow him down to the point that it's unusable, or would it just be slightly slower?
Well, without being an internet service provider myself, I only know what I've learned through research and through some of the ISPs I've had contact with.
Mm-hmm.
To determine what you can actually slow down, you do need to know a little bit about how ISPs work and what they can even recognize.
Okay.
ISPs can't always tell everything, and even if they know what websites you're going to, they may or may not be able to slow your traffic down to those specific websites. But for the most part, ISPs can see a lot, and it would be possible for them to limit traffic in some certain ways, maybe to a particular website or to a particular group of servers somewhere.
And what would the other side say? Does anybody know what their justification is as to why it is that we should not have net neutrality? Is it?
Oh, yeah, sure. There are other arguments against. It's a big government thing. It's a regulation thing. So those who prefer small government or as little government as possible would disagree with the government regulating companies and how they can provide a service. They would argue that, well, you have a choice of ISPs. And if your ISP says they're going to throttle you and do this, we'll choose somebody else. And here in Brookings, you have a few choices of ISPs. Your landline ISPs are going to be like Charter for cable TV cables. Frontier, of course, for DSL, digital subscriber line. You've got like HughesNet for satellite. You have your mobile carriers, mm-hmm. Verizon, AT&T. Who else is decent around here? Oh, and I should mention 600 amps as well as a local ISP. I sometimes meet people who use Sprint and US Cellular as well. So those are all mobile providers. Those are all ISPs that you can sign up with here locally.
Mm-hmm.
So you have some choices.
So would this competition between these guys improve things?
Well, right now their competition between each other is whether you can get their cables or whether they provide faster or slower service than the other guys or how much they charge you for that service.
Mm-hmm.
With net neutrality being repealed, these different companies could work or peer with other companies, service actual websites like YouTube or Facebook and so on, and offer you packages. Or, hey, Charter's got the good Facebook package, but Sprint, they've got the YouTube package. And again, this is all theoretical. This is all could. A lot of horror stories came out before and now after the repeal of what companies could do with the repeal of net neutrality. Until you actually see these companies doing these things, it's largely theoretical what they could do with your traffic.
Go ahead.
I would like to just mention how much this reminds me of our medical system. We have all these choices, right? Every year we get to evaluate the programs offered to us to make another decision. Reminds me of doing taxes. So instead of just going to the doctor, so this is the sort of thing. In the beginning, you offered, how does this affect me? And I couldn't think of this at that time. I got this thing about efficiency, and I don't mean business efficiency, I mean life efficiency.
Mm.
The most important thing to us is time. Sometimes money can buy us time, but time in our short lives is really valuable. And when we have to spend all our time trying to negotiate a complicated system, and this would be complicated, just like our healthcare system is very complicated next to single payer, then it wastes a lot of our time. And that time is valuable.
It's money.
So you're saying it would be more complicated without net neutrality than with? Is that what you're saying? Or
it would be less complicated with net neutrality.
Ah, okay.
So are we concluding this is not all blown out of proportion, that from a people point of view, that this is a bad deal to have net neutrality basically done away with and it be a free market enterprise or government enterprise? Or
well, I have yet to see what companies have done or will do with the repeal. There are instances where in the past some companies, some ISPs have taken advantage of looser laws and less of the net neutrality principle. Comcast in particular is one of the prime examples that a lot of proponents of net neutrality point to and say, well, once upon a time Comcast was throttling users of BitTorrent, a peer-to-peer sharing service. It's possible that companies could do some things that others might consider wicked, but private companies will do wicked things all the time. And if you're an aware consumer, you might choose not to buy from this company or that company. You might choose not to buy chicken that's handled by Tyson Foods or organizations like that.
Okay.
But I think I would maybe be concerned that not only thinking about the ISPs, but thinking about companies you patronize online, that it could get to be where the larger companies, like say Target or Walmart, some of those big companies, they would be able to afford to be online and getting your attention with a fast website, whereas smaller companies, for instance, Maggie's Organics or something, where you might want to buy some clothes from them, but they're very small. And there's a lot of small clothing companies online. And without net neutrality, it could be that it would cost them more than they could afford to get a good website for you. Could that be? I don't know.
It's my understanding that that's possible. Yes.
Yeah, and so that would be, it would mean there would be less less competition for the bigger companies, but less choice for us. I personally prefer buying from smaller companies that I feel like it's...
There are so many neat things that you can buy from smaller companies. I mean, to me, that's one of the big beauties of the internet is that, I can be looking for a little metal disc about yay big around to fit onto a model airplane. And I just type metal disc into the search engine and then look at all of the pictures and say, that looks like maybe something that I could use. And you can find these little oddball things that fit, like, you know, for example, you're into knitting, and I know, you know, any hobby has its little oddball things that are specific to that particular hobby.
Right.
And I think that's one of the great things about it. And I wonder, is that going away? Am I going to lose the ability to buy hobby supplies by searching the internet for it? Is it going to be
probably
tedious?
Not.
Probably not.
Probably.
I would hope not.
A lot of those little oddball companies have become quite large over the years, too. I can remember years ago buying specific things I needed for woodworking from a little obscure company that by the time I was done buying from them, 5 or 10 years later, they were a fairly large company with impressive inventories and websites.
Well, you know, there's once a rather obscure little website started up at a college. You know, pretty small, little, I'd call it a mom and pop, a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
I called it Facebook.
Yeah.
Boy, I wonder if they remember their little mom and pop roots.
And I know, it seems to me, I was talking with another fellow who flies model airplanes, and we were talking about the little hobby shops that might have existed in Brookings 10, 20 years ago can't exist now because, first of all, they can't compete with a price against the big hobby suppliers, and some of those guys are out of China and Japan. And it's a world market now, so how does the little guy... I mean, this is the Walmart principle, I think, and And to me, I see that as being a large part of what this problem is that suddenly we're going from a level playing field to what the market can bear. It's a privatization. It's a for-profit kind of a thing that we're entering into. And I can see why the Republican point of view, which wants free markets and all of that sort of stuff, I can see why they would argue for this. But I fear that for us little guys that we would be at a fairly distinct disadvantage. I don't know. It just... I guess I'm one of those guys who sees the potential for conspiracy and everything, even though I don't really believe in conspiracy theories, but I see, you know, that kind of a possibility.
Skepticism.
So, yeah. So, okay, we've got about 4 minutes left. And so to sum up what we've said, my first question is, okay, is this a bad thing or are we getting it all blown out of proportion? Is net neutrality something we need to fight?
You want to go around the table and get final thoughts?
Yeah, final thoughts.
Okay. Well, if we're blowing it out of proportion, so are a lot of people. There's a whole bunch of web lawsuits going on this and against this, and congressmen and senators fighting it, and big tech companies against it, too. I'm not sure what their interest is, and maybe somebody knows, but... it's not being blown out of proportion for me.
Well, obviously, this is going to make more money for somebody. It's the only reason there would be so much time being spent on it. And I don't think it's the little guy that's going to wind up making more money on it. The Koch brothers will probably increase their coffers with this.
Okay, Linda?
Okay, I think it's really important that we preserve net neutrality.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You see it as a big brother move to, or?
I think some people would say, well, it's big government because government has a repeal, what set up the net neutrality rules to start with, except do we want big corporations controlling us instead of government, which we do actually, we can write to our congressmen and we can actually call them, we can see them in town hall meetings, which is hard to do with, I've never gone to a town hall meeting for, say, Target. I don't know that they have them. So I think I'd rather be having rules set by the government than by companies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to demonize companies necessarily, but I also think that companies often need to be regulated by a third party. Folks, if any of you out there are concerned about having some of your information collected by ISPs or by other people in between, use means to protect yourself. Look into virtual private networks. Look into the Onion Router. Look into ways to keep yourself safe. Find somebody who knows about this stuff and talk to them about it. Do some research.
Okay, and one last time, Linda, if you would please, can you tell us if we're going to pursue this from the state level, who do we contact?
Representative David Brock Smith, and his number is 503-986-1401. He also has a website and email, which you can find, and his website is oregonlegislature.gov/SmithD, S-M-I-T-H-D.
Cool. All right, I'm Dan.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Ray.
I'm Linda.
And I'm Dane.
And thank you very much, and don't forget to write. KCIW Discussion at Brookings Cafe. Thank you.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.